morning.
Morning.
With the court's permission, I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Again, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Mario Dispenza, and I represent the taxpayers, Mark and Ann Barnes, in this case against the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Your Honors, the Barneses are asking this court for resolution of several matters stemming from the Commissioner's examination of their tax return for 2003. They are asking this court to find as a matter of law that Internal Revenue Code Sections 1366 and 1367 do not mandate the reduction of a taxpayer's basis in an S corporation unless the taxpayer first declares a deduction on the taxpayer's return. They are also asking this court to reverse the tax court's finding that they did not underreport income from Mr. Barnes' sole proprietorship event promotions in 2003, and reverse the tax court's finding that the commissioner rightly imposed penalties pursuant to his examination of that 2003 return. Your Honors, the controversy surrounding sections 1366 and 1367 stem from the commissioner's conclusion in that 2003 examination in which he is imposing double taxation on the taxpayers upon the distribution of the sale of assets in their corporation, their S corporation, Whitney Restaurants Incorporated. In his examination, the commissioner focused on the disposition of the assets for Whitney Restaurants, and in doing so, he examined the basis and reached back to the beginning of their investment, which was 1995. And when he arrived in 1997, he found that the Barneses had sustained and suspended losses from 1995 and 1996, which the Barneses did not deduct in 1997, although they were entitled to do so. The commissioner forced the deduction, a reduction of the basis in 1997 and carried it through to 2003. Now, the Barneses did not take a deduction for those losses before 1997. Accordingly, they overpaid their taxes in 1997. And this is something.
I want to be clear. In other words, as I understand, your key argument is that the statutes themselves didn't tell the taxpayer exactly when he and she had to recognize this loss, right?
Somewhat,
that's
Your Honor.
That's part of your argument.
It is. Our argument is that sections 1366 and 1367 were inserted into the code by Congress as balancing mechanisms. They are a way to prevent double taxation of the taxpayer.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is I just want to understand the principle here, and that is that if there are two statutes on the books and the taxpayer says, it doesn't tell me exactly when I have to take this loss, and the commissioner says, I'm telling you, you had to take it in year one, all right, and that's appealed administratively. What do you have to show in order to prevail?
Congress's intent behind the...
Well, suppose it's silent.
Well, suppose it's silent,
it's a balancing mechanism, but
when one takes a deduction, for example, when one takes the deduction in 1 year, that person lowers his taxes. He receives a tax deduction. When the distributions of the corporation are sold, when the assets of the corporation are distributed down the road, if the person takes a deduction in 1 year, receiving a tax benefit, he must also reduce his basis so that he does not benefit doubly.
I guess all I'm getting at is, doesn't the tax code often put the taxpayer in that position, that if you don't claim something in the right year, you've lost that right, and you have to pay the tax as though you didn't have that deduction or credit?
It can, Your Honor, when you're talking about a claimed refund. And the Barneses are not asking for a claimed refund.
I understand. They're claiming they want to recognize this loss in a year other than 1998.
They wanted to accurately account for their basis. And that is what sections 1366 and 1367 are in the code precisely to do, and there couldn't be a clearer articulation of that purpose than the Supreme Court's decision in Gitlitz versus the commissioner, which ironically the commissioner relies on chiefly in his case before the bench today.
What about the regulation 1.1367-1? It says the basis of a shareholder's share of stock is decreased by an amount equal to the shareholder's pro rata portion of the pass-through items and distributions described in Section 1367A2.
Yes, Your Honor, it
does. And 1367A2, which is the statute we've been talking about, says the basis shall be decreased by the items of loss.
Yes, Your Honor.
So why isn't that the end of the question?
Because, again, the to get to using 1366 and 1367, there must be a predicate for those sections to apply.
It says that the regulation says the basis of the shareholder's share is decreased by that amount. And then in Part D it says the adjustments described are determined as of the close of the corporation's taxable year. It doesn't say when they are, when a deduction is taken or anything like that.
No, but 1367 D3C does say that the loss.
1367
D3C.
You're talking about the statute now or the?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, he's only on this.
Okay, 1367. Bear with me while I find this. A, B.
While he's looking for that, we're talking about the 1997 tax year, right? That's the year taxpayers could have taken it.
That is correct, Judge.
Could they have simply amended their 1997 tax return?
They could have if the commissioner had examined the return within the statute of limitations period. That's where the real difficulty comes in here for the Barneses, because the Section 6511 foreclosed them from applying for a refund in 1997 because the examination was in 2003 and the statute of limitations for a refund is 3 years. And the Barneses were not asking for a refund. All they're asking for is not to be double taxed, which is what Justice Thomas said in his opinion in Gitlitz, is the purpose of 1366.
They're only being double taxed because they didn't take the deduction the year they could have.
Respectfully, Judge Garland, I'm not sure that's the case.
Why?
Because the commissioner could have taken a look at the intent of 1366 and 1367 to prevent double taxation, and he could have taken several avenues.
But they wouldn't have been double taxed if they'd taken it at that point, right?
That is correct.
You wouldn't have this argument. So the only real question here is whether the taxpayer misunderstood the law, and it's not as if this will always result in double taxation. Anybody who reads the law the way the commissioner reads it won't be double taxed.
Well, that is unless somebody makes a mistake in his taxes and in reporting his taxes in one year.
Well, that's a problem all the time if you make it. But can I go back? I don't see this section you're talking about. I've looked both in your version of the statute and my own, and there is no D3C. So you must be talking about a different section.
I must be. The section in question says that the basis adjustment downward, once a corporation is wrapped up, which Whitney Corporation was at that point, shall be limited to the deduction allowed. And in this case, the Barneses were
what
not.
What section are you talking about? That's not in 1367, is it?
If I'm misquoting it, Your Honor, I apologize.
You say 1367 D3, but.
I beg your pardon, 1366. I beg your pardon. Okay.
All right, D.
D3C.
Okay, that's on addendum 17.
That's only for carryovers.
But we do have a carry forward, and that the commissioner was taking into account here. And they were suspended losses from 1995 and 1996 for 1997. Again, the entire purpose of 1366 and 1367 inserted in the code is to prevent double taxation, and that's exactly the result that's happening to the Barneses today. And we're asking this court to find that that the commissioner should have followed the intent of the law using the tools that he had at his disposal to do so.
That's why I started with, I thought your argument was the statute doesn't tell you when.
That is correct, Judge Rogers, because Congress inserted rules of flexibility for when they said, you know, for any year that the deduction that the deduction is taken, any year that basis reduction is taken, recognizing that it is not necessarily going to happen in any specific year.
But what about the regulation that says the adjustments described in Section 1367A are determined as of the close of the corporation's taxable year, and the adjustments generally are effective as of that date?
And that is true, Your Honor. But those are the deductions that determined what those deductions are. But if the...
It doesn't say deductions. It says the adjustments described.
And that is what the adjustment would be. If the loss is $100,000, the adjustment would be $100,000. We're not arguing the calculation of the loss or the calculation of what the basis adjustment would be, just how the basis adjustment is done to ensure fairness to the taxpayers, that the taxpayer is only taxed once.
Further questions?
Yeah, you know, I have just one question about the other issue.
Yes, Judge.
You argue in your brief, I'm looking at page 44. You say the commissioner's choice to disbelieve taxpayers' representation that the 30,000 Anheuser-Busch income was not overreported, but to believe taxpayers the 28,000 in expenses related to that income were indeed overreported deserves skepticism. I assume you mean by that more than just deserves skepticism, right? But did you make that argument in the tax court?
We did, Your Honor, but as far as orally, no. The argument was submitted on the stipulated facts. The facts were in the...
Did you make this argument in the tax court?
I don't know that we made it specifically.
Does that mean you didn't make it?
I believe we did.
Yeah.
I
believe you believe what?
I believe that it does mean that we didn't specifically say that, Your Honor.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
But the voucher or at A5 was before the tax court.
Yes, Your Honor, it was. Right. You're talking about the Anheuser-Busch.
Right.
Yes,
thank
it
you.
Was. Mm-hmm. In that respect, what we're saying is that they recognize, well, you did have this $30,000 in income. They disbelieve the taxpayers there, but they're saying that we don't believe that you incurred these $28,000 in expenses that related to generating that income. And there was no reason why they said they didn't believe the claimed expenses, but that they did find that the revenue was there.
This argument is that there was $60,000 more that...
They essentially what they did was they deposited an entire check into one account for a different business, and they also accounted for $30,000 of that was supposed to go in the other business. In essence, they reported $90,000 instead of $60,000.
Does the tax return reflect, or any of the documents reflect this breakout?
I beg your pardon?
Do the documents that were before the tax court reflect this breakout of the $30,000 and $30,000?
They do. The return does. The returns do, and the vouchers do.
The return doesn't just have the $168,000 amount. It has it separately.
No, that was the commissioner's concern, is that they didn't have sufficient documentation
yes.
to break that out.
Yes. And is that right?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
No, it's right that they didn't have sufficient.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
So the voucher at A5 doesn't help here. Doesn't help the taxpayer.
Well, it helps the taxpayer in that it's explicit that the $60,000 was for
two separate events.
Yes.
But it doesn't identify the separate businesses.
No, Your Honor.
I see. Okay.
All right, we'll hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm John Ouellette, and I represent the commissioner in this case. Commissioner relies on the plain reading of the statutes in question on this S corporation loss issue. We begin by looking at 1366A1, which requires that the taxpayer take into account in computing their income any pass-through item, in this case a loss, from the S corporation, and that it be taken in the year in which the S corporation year ends. At that point, you have this requirement that you cannot deduct the loss in any amount greater than your basis in your S corporation stock. And if it does exceed that basis, you don't get to take the loss in that year. You have to suspend it, so to speak, and carry it forward to the next succeeding year in which it would be treated as a loss at the S corporation level and pass through again. In subsection D of 1366, it's rather explicit that the loss is only suspended if by virtue of the basis limitation it's been disallowed. And that's why we take the position that you can't carry this forward to whatever year you'd like. You have to take it in the next succeeding year in which you have the sufficient basis.
So that's the D2 language?
D2, I believe, Your Honor, yes. Uh-huh. D1, I think, expresses the limitation requirement. D2 says it was to be treated in the next succeeding year, and that it is only treated suspended if it's been disallowed by virtue of the basis limitation, if you're following it. So in other words, I don't even think we need to go to the regulation to say, well, you can't suspend it to whatever year you, or carry it to whatever year you want to, because it's only if it's been disallowed by virtue of the limitation. So if as soon as you have sufficient basis, you need to take it. And of course, basis is determined based on 1367. 1367 refers you right back to 1366, and it says in 1367, you adjust your basis by a decrease with respect to a loss item. With respect to a loss item, which is referenced in 1366A. So when the taxpayers argue that any period means any period you want to reduce your basis, we would say no. The statutes have to be read in pari materia. You look back, it actually even references back to 1366 and says, you know, it's an item of loss with respect to that year and with respect to which you have to adjust your basis for that year. So as Your Honors had mentioned before,
so can I just be clear, since we're talking about this is the plain language of the statute, 1367A2 talks about decreasing the basis
in this case a loss item, but not below zero.
Right, so if you have, as they did, the loss greater than the basis, where does the statute tell you what happens next?
Well, what I'm suggesting is, so you have a loss that's not greater than your basis, so you look at D, 1366D, and it says, you know,
D is in David?
Yes, D.
Okay. Yep.
And then in D2,
right,
that loss, which you weren't able to use because it was disallowed by virtue of the limitation, is treated as incurred in the next succeeding year.
So disallowed simply means you couldn't take it.
You couldn't take it because your basis wasn't sufficient. So that's where we're suggesting that under a plain reading, you're not going to be able to take it forward unless it was disallowed by virtue of the limitation. A fortiori, you can't just carry it to any future year that you'd like. And it's really not a harsh or anomalous result, in that, just like any deduction, if you don't take it in the year in which you're allowed it, and you don't correct it within a statute of limitations period, you do lose it. It's true for all deductions.
I don't remember this, but I mean, if there's a 3-year statute of limitations on amending your...
Yes, basically. I think it's the greater of 3 or 2 years, 2 years from the date you pay it, if it, or 3 years,
so
whichever
is
greater.
Is it told if the commissioner in the 4th or 5th year finds a deficiency? In other words, you pay your taxes, you think you owe it. Then the commissioner tells you on year 4 that no, you owe more taxes. At that point, as I understood Appellant's argument, it's too late to amend your tax return.
Correct.
So it is.
Now, if the commissioner raises it in the deficiency notice and the year's not closed.
We're in year 4 now.
Correct.
So we're outside the 3-year statute of limitations.
But if the commissioner raises it in the notice of deficiency, I believe it would bring it up for review that if that particular item has been challenged on some basis or...
Then you can file an amendment.
But you simply can't amend for a refund claim once you're beyond the 3 years.
Stick with me so I'm clear on this. In this case, that was Judge Tatel's question as I understood it. Could they have filed an amended return for their 1998...
They're foreclosed. The year was closed by the statute of limitations. So the only thing at issue was in 2003, and of course the deduction was disallowed because they missed taking it back in 97.
So they are correct that if you pay in year 1, and in year 5 the commissioner tells you you owe more money.
Well, that was an audit of the 2003 return. So in other words, by virtue of them not having adjusted their basis as required, they thought, well, we can now take all these losses in 2003 because we're suspending them to that point. Well, we're saying no, the basis should have been adjusted back when, and now you don't have sufficient basis to take all these losses in 2003. But each year is separate, stands on its own, and it doesn't reopen the issue for 1997. We're talking about 2003, and you missed it in 97, so now you don't get to take them in 2003.
So your understanding of the tax law is, I thought the commissioner had a 6-year window after you file your taxes to come after you.
10 years, actually, but...
It's 10 years now. So if he does, you just have to pay the penalties and interest and whatever tax you're owed. There's no way that...
Well, again, they didn't issue a notice of deficiency with respect to 97.
No, I understand your point.
Yes, with respect to 2003. And by that time, they could... What they're attempting to do is carry forward losses that they were required to have deducted in 1997 and didn't. And it's simply too late. And again, you could say it's harsh, but all of us are subject to the same rule for any deduction. A charitable deduction, if you were to miss claiming it when you actually incurred it, and more than 3 years expire, and you say, geez, I made a mistake, and it's too late. I can't correct my return for that year because I missed the time to do it. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that's what we're talking about here. And they'd like to invoke the tax benefit rule. It simply isn't triggered by this situation. Equitable considerations just, deductions don't turn on equitable considerations. The tax benefit rule was designed to tax, originally designed judicially to tax an amount that you receive in a current year where you have deducted it in a prior year, but it turns out that it was on a false premise. You weren't really entitled to deduction then. And then there is an exclusionary portion of that rule that says, however, even though you claimed the deduction back then, if you didn't truly benefit from it, then you can exclude that portion that you didn't benefit from in the current year. But it just doesn't apply to give a taxpayer a deduction in the current year that they didn't claim in a prior year where they've missed the statute of limitations. One other thing, and we mentioned it in our brief, which I think bolsters our argument in our reading of this, of 1366 and 1367, is Congress saw fit to write in specifically a rule that says, for income items, if you fail to report them on your return, we're not going to also allow you to adjust your basis for that period for the income items. In other words, we're not going to both let you get away with not paying the tax on your income and also let you get away with an increased adjustment to your basis so that the basis still reflects on disposition, a higher value so that you would pay less of a gain at disposition. So, but they didn't see fit and saw no reason to put a similar type of provision in for losses. They didn't say, well, if you don't report the loss on your return, then, you don't have to adjust your basis. So, all in all, if Congress wanted it that way, they could have said so. And we think the plain meaning of these statutes suggests that these suspended losses could not be carried beyond 97, and so they were correctly disallowed in the year at issue. And I see my time's up.
Other questions from the court? All right.
Thank you.
How much time is left for the appellant? We'll give you another 2 minutes.
Your Honor, I'd like to take issue with a couple of the commissioner's arguments. Again, the Barneses are not arguing the limitation to when to someone's reduction of a basis. We recognize that you are limited to taking a deduction to what your adjusted basis is. That is not subject to argument between us. What we're arguing is how you arrive at that basis. Now, the commissioner argues that this has not been an anomalous result. I would beg to differ. This is exactly an anomalous result. It is precisely the result that Congress tried to prevent by enacting 1366 and 1367. The Barneses are being double taxed, which the commissioner is not denying. They are being double taxed on this, and 1366 and 1367 were specifically inserted into the code to prevent this result.
Which still not following. If they had taken the loss in the year that the commissioner says,
yes,
you agree they would not have been double taxed?
I believe that they would not have been double taxed if the commissioner had followed several of those avenues to prevent the result. But yes, Your Honor, the premise of the predicate of this was they're not taking their deduction. But
it's
again,
the commissioner's obligation to review everybody's tax returns to make sure they took the deductions in the year they were supposed to. I mean, these taxpayers didn't do it.
They didn't take a deduction, Your Honor. That's true.
Right.
But it is also the commissioner's responsibility to ensure fairness to the taxpayer as well. And as in the Gitlitz decision, right after the quote that the commissioner cites for the court, Justice Thomas says, addressing profits passing directly to the shareholders, profits and loss directly to the shareholders, he says, to prevent double taxation of income upon distribution of the corporation to the shareholders, sections 1366 and 1367 allow basis adjustment. Those sections are there to prevent a double taxation. And as this court has recognized in U.S. Versus Denise Baxton Brown Smith, that in quoting or citing American Trucking, the Supreme Court cases of American Trucking, United States versus American Trucking, the court must avoid an interpretation that undermines congressional purpose considered as a whole when an alternative interpretation consistent with the legislative purpose is available. And in this case, as in that case, the commissioner is downplaying the realities of what has happened to the Barneses.
All right. We have your argument. Thank you very much. We'll take the case under submission.